I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke. So Emma, 2021, tell me, what are your plans for 2021? What have you got in mind for this year?
Well, I know this really nice person and she's getting married. And
that's ages away.
Yeah, but there's a hen do to do before that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and it's all just very exciting. It's just, I think it's nice to be in the run up to it. Technically, this is the second time you're having a run up to it, but surely it can still be exciting, no?
Yeah, definitely, because I think, obviously, we were supposed to get married in December 2020, but who wants to, you know, who wanted to commemorate that year?
Yeah.
And it ended up getting postponed. And it's quite nice now because I can just look forward to it and hopefully not have to worry about any pandemics.
Yeah, you get don't in need the to way. Do the whole who can I invite, who can I not invite, are people going to get sick after, all that kind of thing. So
yeah, exactly.
More of a normal time.
Yeah
definitely. So that's very exciting. Yeah. And I was also thinking, if our lovely listeners keep growing, which they seem to be doing, thank you so much to everyone who's joined us. If you're new, please don't judge the first episodes. We were just learning, but we hope you enjoy them anyway.
Listen to five onwards, please. Yes,
yeah, listen to five onwards. Hey, I put a lot of work in some of those. No, but I think it'd be fun for us to, once we're able to, do some sort of meetup or like a live event, that sort of thing. So want to just put some feelers out and see if people would be up for that, because I think it'd be really good fun.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, we have a lot of listeners who are international, but I do think that most of our fan base is in the UK and particularly in Scotland. So it shouldn't be too difficult to arrange a meetup. So if people are keen to do that when it's possible, that would be really, really cool. So if you're keen, let us know, get in touch on socials, and just drop us a note to tell us if you would be interested in that kind of thing.
We do love it if you interact with us on social media. We've had lots of fun interactions with you guys, so please keep that up.
And your reviews.
And the reviews, yes. Please do leave reviews, unless you hate everything we do. Please do not leave a review.
Do not leave a review.
For some reason, we've heard of other podcasters get really mean reviews. And like, we're quite soft-hearted people. You will break our hearts.
Yeah, I'm just going to put this out there. Podcasters put a hell of a lot of work into what they do. Most people also have a full-time job as well as doing podcasting. The amount of research that goes into the episodes, then we have to record them and edit them, upload them, and also do all the promo for them on socials and things.
And there's two of us. Most people are doing this as a one-man band. Yeah, so that's way harder.
It's a huge amount of work for one person to do. And it's free content. It's completely free, unless you choose to donate something or sign up for a Patreon. And unfortunately, some people only feel a tendency to leave a review when they have something negative to say. And an important thing to remember, whether you're leaving a review for us or any other podcast, that there is an individual behind that podcast. And actually, sometimes the harsh words are really, really devastating, especially when the intentions are good. It's different if someone has the wrong intentions, or they're doing it for personal gain or something like that. But I would like to say, I think, at least for the most part, that it's with good intentions that people do what we do. Mm. So please bear that in mind if you leave a review for us or anyone else.
Yeah, we've been pretty lucky, actually, that all of our reviews so far have been really nice. And once again, thank you so much to everyone for those. But yeah, unfortunately, some people whose shows that we listen to and we think they're great, you could probably make a bit of a sketch show out for them, because some of them are really funny. Like, someone will put in 60 hours work researching and they'll do the show, they'll speak to the family, like they'll pay good money for like to get access to specific documents. There'll be journals to do all this kind of stuff, and someone will be like, that episode was shit. I read a Daily Mail article and it said such and such, and your sound quality was weird at 6 minutes 21 seconds. You're just like, wow, you're hard to please. But you know what, there's going to be those people in every part of life. You're going to get those people. So was it, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all, is that it?
Yeah.
But yeah, we are very, very happy with our Murder, She Spoke family, and yeah, just keep it up, keep sending us your recommendations, and we would love to meet you at some point in the near future.
We know you're fascinated by true crime,
but how often do you get to hear from the survivors in their own words? I'm Jamie Beebe.
And I'm Jake Deptula. We're the host of Strictly Stalking, the true crime podcast that explores the devastating crime of stalking.
Every week, our guests reveal the true terror they're facing at the hands of a stalker
and the steps they take to fight back.
We're uncovering the real stories you think you've heard, from Tara Newell surviving Dirty John to others you won't hear anywhere else.
Be sure to subscribe to our podcast, Strictly Stalking, from Cast Media, wherever you listen to podcasts.
So, Emma, what case do you have for us this week?
So, I have a case that I found when I was looking at famous local murders to myself. I live on the outskirts of Edinburgh. And it was one I hadn't heard of, actually. And a lot of people who live in and around Edinburgh will be familiar with the where it happened. So just thought it was quite interesting. And there was some links to famous murderers as well. The case I'm covering is that of Helen Kane. It's from way back in 1970. No offence to anyone who's been alive since or before 1970, but this is a slightly older case, so some people may not have heard of it. Have you heard of the murder of Helen Kane?
Not that I know of, no.
Okay. So it was 1970. Helen Kane was 25 years old and a mother of four, which is quite impressive at 25. You're very unlikely to see that nowadays. She lived in Edinburgh, out at Craigmillar. And she was married to Joe, her husband, who was a hospital porter. They'd been married for 7 years and, like I said, they had four sons. So there was Joe Jr., who was 6 at the time, Michael, who was 5, Kevin, who was 3, and Raymond, who was 10 months. So she was kept pretty busy with the four boys. On a Saturday night in May of 1970, Helen and her husband Joe were out celebrating their anniversary. So they're out for some drinks at the Dockers Club in the Leith area of the city with another couple who they were friends with. Helen's sister was looking after the four boys to allow the couple to have a night out. Towards closing time, around about 11:30 at night, Helen decided to head home. It doesn't state why, but it's presumed that it was to relieve her sister of the babysitting duties or to kind of just make sure the boys were okay. And Joe stayed for some final drinks with the friends. A witness saw the petite woman, so she's quite small and slim and dark-haired, she was getting into a cab. And then later on, a taxi driver confirmed that he'd picked up a woman matching Helen's description and dropped her off on Royal Terrace, which is closer to the city centre than where she was. And it was on the way home. Another witness spotted a couple, the woman matching Helen's description, in Holyrood Park sometime after this. Helen and Joe, as said, lived in Craigmillar, to the south of the city centre, so she was heading in the right direction, but it's not known why she didn't get a taxi the whole way there. Detectives later appealed to any taxi drivers who may have taken a man and a woman to the Dumby Dykes area between 11 p.m. and 2 a.m. Do you know where the Dumby Dykes area is?
No, not really.
So it's right next to Holyrood Park. So that's where they were. So kind of in the right direction to go home, but it would suggest that she got out the taxi at Royal Terrace and then either started walking that way, maybe was trying to get another taxi, maybe she was going to get a bus.
Is Royal Terrace not near the Edinburgh Playhouse?
It is, yeah. But you can walk along it to Easter Road and then up you can kind of go round to Hollywood that way.
Right.
So I'm presuming that's the way that she would have gone.
But you said she lives in Craig Miller?
She lives in Craig Miller, yeah.
And she was in Holyrood Park?
Holyrood Park. It's pretty odd.
That's far away from Craig Miller. That's not near at all.
No, but what I'm saying is, it is on the way, but that's why I'm curious as to why she got out the taxi. So she got a taxi from Leith.
With her partner?
No, by herself.
Right.
So she left her husband with the two friends.
Right.
They were staying for a couple more drinks. She was going back.
She wanted to go home.
Presumably to get the... So her sister was looking after the kids. She was right. Going, yeah.
To relieve her sister of the kids.
So she went back earlier. I don't know if maybe she was just ready to go and they were staying for a couple more. But she was by herself.
But you said that they were drinking in the Dockers Bar in Leith.
Yep.
She jumped in a taxi.
Mm-hmm.
She was spotted at Royal Terrace.
Yep.
And then at Holyrood Park.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying that is the right direction for her to be going in for living in Craig Miller?
Yeah, because she would have come into town to then go out. No? Would you not come up through? If I was driving, I would come from Leith into town and then out up the bridges. Is that not the way you would go?
Oh, right, to cut through Hollywood across. To get onto the bridges.
Yeah, must have been.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
It would make sense,
to Old Dalkeith Road kind of way.
And I'm guessing, so she might have been there. I don't know why she would have gotten out the cab to get another cab. But anyway, she got out the cab at Royal Terrace for whatever reason. And then it sounds as though a man and a woman, presumably her and whoever was with her, went to the Dumby Dykes area. It sounds maybe like she was trying to save money. Maybe they were, you know, that said, are you going that way too? That kind of thing.
Yeah, shared a cab with someone.
It's the only thing I can think of. So that's the last thing that was known. It's not 100% known for sure that she was one of the pair that was taken in the cab to Dumby Dykes. Once again, it's a couple with someone matching Helen's description in Holyrood Park. There's no CCTV at this time. There's no confirmation, but these are the witness statements that we've got. The following morning, on May 25th, 1970, Helen's half-nude body was found on a construction site between Holyrood Park and the Dumby Dykes estate by a man walking his dog. So, yeah, south of the Pleasance, where those flats were, that was the construction site. At the time.
Right.
She had been battered, likely with a paving slab or a rock from the construction site, and she was unclothed from the waist down. It's presumed that Helen was sexually assaulted, though due to police procedures at the time, no skin or semen samples were taken from her body. Her clothes were found with her and those were taken, and she was clutching some hair in her hand, and that was collected. So all the evidence and some items around her were collected at the time. At the time, Angus Sinclair, who I am planning on covering in a separate episode, he was later convicted as a serial killer and of the World's End murders. Christine Eady and Helen Scott, who were murdered in October 1977. So he actually lived less than a mile from where Helen's body was found. Sinclair was 24 at the time, and he'd been released from prison just 2 years prior on a charge of raping and killing an 8-year-old girl.
Jesus.
Yeah. He gave police an alibi. His wife at the time gave an alibi, and it was later on found to have been bogus, but he was cleared at the time.
Not the first time that's happened. Don't give false alibis, people.
Yeah, don't. Just don't give false alibis, even if you love the person, even if they're your son, your daughter.
If you think they're innocent.
Could you live with that, knowing that?
Just don't.
It's not worth it. Helen's case went cold. And so there's a couple of different accounts of why this happened. Vital pieces of evidence are no longer held by the police. One of the sources that I read said that there was a big move of the police headquarters, and essentially for certain cases, they just
lost the data.
No, they threw it out.
Right.
They threw away vital, like, boxes of evidence. They just threw away. And in other sources, it said that they were lost as a result of the move. But I just don't know why they would state that they were tossed if they, you know, they didn't have any real reason to say that.
Mm.
Anyway, just thought that was an interesting point. All of the things that were lost, the post-mortem report was gone. The clump of hair that she had in her hands and some other items were lost as well. An inquiry into Helen's murder was launched as part of Operation Trinity, which was an operation where they re-looked into cold cases, and that was in 2004. It was led by retired detective Superintendent Alan Jones, and he strongly believed that Angus Sinclair should be considered in Helen's murder. A case was presented to the Procurator Fiscal, but it was decided that there was insufficient evidence. Jones stated, quote, "Angus Sinclair certainly killed more than the four people he was convicted of killing. His crimes carried common hallmarks that enabled us to say the same man was responsible. There are enough common factors to persuade me that he was the most likely culprit in Helen Kane's death. Her body was left in much the same way as his other victims, with her lower clothing and underwear removed, leaving her exposed. The degree of violence was extreme, another of his hallmarks. Also, she was targeted after a night out drinking. That was always how he operated. Helen was a mother intercepted as she walked home and taken to a construction site at the base of Arthur's Seat. She was disrobed, we think sexually assaulted, then she was killed by being struck over the head with a stone or a rock. There were no ligatures involved with that one, but again, there was no clothing. And it was close proximity to where Sinclair stayed. He was released from prison in 1968 after the Catherine Rehill killing and worked in Edinburgh at paint suppliers. He met his wife and they lived in Hill Place. Police tracked him down as an ex-killer living in the vicinity, but he was given an alibi by someone very close to him and coincidentally disappeared from Edinburgh within weeks through to Glasgow." Unquote. So that's all pretty interesting to me. He's actually been linked to various other murders as well through in Glasgow, and a lot of them do have a very similar mode of operation. Lots of it is generally seems to be people on a night out, so they're incapacitated already, and yeah. That seems to be his thing. So Alan Jones is very convinced that he had something to do with it, which I can absolutely see why.
Mm-hmm.
However, former Deputy Chief Constable of Lothian Borders Police, Tom Wood, who headed the World's End inquiry between 2004 and 2007, during which time Angus Sinclair was charged, he discounted suggestions of a possible link with Mrs. Kane's murder. Quote, "I looked at Helen Kane's murder, but there was a completely different modus operandi. Helen Kane was killed by having her head slammed by a paving slab. Angus Sinclair, when he killed Catherine Rehill and Mary Gallagher, strangled them. Helen Scott and Christine Eady all strangled using a ligature. You can say, well, here was this murder and he lived in that area, but that doesn't necessarily mean he did it." End quote. He has a point, but it wouldn't be the first murderer in the history of the world to change their mode of operation. I mean, you would have to have a ligature for something like that to occur. What if this was just an opportunity that he took?
Case in point, the Yorkshire Ripper.
Exactly.
There was at least two victims that he used a ligature with around their necks.
Mm-hmm.
That it wasn't apparent in any others. There were victims of his that were discounted because they weren't stabbed, either with a screwdriver or a knife. But he was guilty of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some had a sexual element and others didn't.
Yeah.
I guess there'll be a lot of different factors at play.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I mean, I guess he probably has his reason for saying that, probably knows a lot more than we do, but
I think because he was doing the World's End Inquiry, though, I think that he was obviously really well versed in the specifics of that case, and
yeah.
He obviously looked at that and that he was tied to that case, and then they looked at the previous murder that they knew for a fact he'd committed and been in prison for, and looked at the MO for those, and they matched up.
Yeah.
So I do get it. I completely get it. I get it for both of them. It's really difficult. The police also considered Peter Tobin as a person of interest, but they've ruled him out for reasons unknown. There's no quotes surrounding that. There was an article in the Daily Mail from January of 2020, which states that the evidence, including clothing, so they did actually still have some of her clothing recovered from the crime scene, they are going to be re-examining that evidence to see if there is any forensic evidence which could help solve Helen's murder once and for all. There hasn't been any update on this in news sources as of yet. They will have the DNA for some of the people linked. Angus and Claire, for one, they'll have his DNA. So if there is a link, they'll be able to prove that there was a link. However, because most of the evidence has been lost / thrown away, it would be a circumstantial case if they can't get that. And I think that's why the CPS back in 2004 weren't willing to consider linking him or charging him with anything. However, Angus and Claire died in prison in March of 2019. As such, if he was found to be forensically linked to the case, no prosecution would be possible. So Helen's family are still without answers. If you happen to know anything about the murder of Helen Kane, please contact Police Scotland on 101. Or you can contact Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111 in the UK. So yeah, it's a really difficult one because they've lost the evidence, especially as well. It would be really hard for them to prove.
That's terrible. That's so bad, especially the fact that she had hair in her hat in her hand.
Yeah,
I'm assuming that there's no DNA left.
Well, that's why they're testing the clothing. They're testing the clothing again because there might be something. But
something
yeah,
on there.
They didn't take fingernail scrapings. They didn't take semen samples. They lost some of the things. So for me, it would be incredibly frustrating. And a couple of her sons have actually passed away now, but one of them in particular did go to one of the newspapers and pleaded for Angus and Claire to let him know if he had done it, to confess, and he never did. And then, unfortunately, the son passed away as well. So it's just really sad. The whole thing is just really, really sad. This is a young mum. She's out celebrating her anniversary. She's probably thinking, oh, I hope they're all right, you know.
I better get home and get the kids, yeah.
Exactly. And she's, no, you stay, it's fine, don't worry about it, I'll get a taxi. And then someone, like the policeman says, has intercepted her and that's it. And she was left exposed and displayed in a construction site.
Discarded.
Yeah. It's disgusting. So it's just it's a really hard one because it would be so difficult for that to be proven or prosecuted unless they somehow find DNA. And even then, if they do, if the person's in the system. So it's one that just, it left me feeling a bit deflated, to be honest.
Yeah, it's understandable. So are some of her other children still living?
As far as I know, there's two of the boys still living. Her husband passed away and her sister has passed away also.
And when did you say this crime took place? In the 70s?
1970,
yeah. Yeah.
There's also another case that's linked to Angus Sinclair where the clothing of the victim wasn't stored properly, so all the DNA has degraded. it's just so frustrating with these ones. And I know it's the way that, you know, they didn't know about any of this, so they couldn't have possibly known. But it's just so frustrating, and you just think, what if, you know, that what if, and if it was your family member? Can you imagine thinking, if only they'd sealed the bag tighter? Because that's what it was for some of them. They didn't know how to store things properly. You know, they weren't heat controlled. They weren't in the correct containers. They didn't cross-contaminate. And that's the thing, even if you did want to take it to court, how could you argue that the chain of custody for things, how could you argue that there wasn't any cross-contamination? Things were slung absolutely. In boxes and literally carried to the new police headquarters. Things were thrown in the bin.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's come a long way since then. But also, probably the only saving grace with that is that even if perhaps there was DNA evidence available, like the killer of Tracy Wilde, you know, they might not necessarily be on the system.
Mm,
if it's not the person that's suspected, you know, even if they did manage to, you know, scavenge some DNA that's left, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to get conviction.
Yeah.
Only if that person has had to give DNA for any other reason to the police would they potentially catch them. And if the DNA was given and was able to be stored.
And we're talking 50 years ago now, the person might not be alive.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, the Tracy Wilde case is a perfect example of that, where there was DNA.
Hmm.
And even with that, the wrong man was pursued. And 20 years after the fact, they eventually found the guy because he then entered into the system again.
Pure luck, almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically. So that's probably the only saving grace with it. Even if there is DNA, it doesn't necessarily mean that that then secures a conviction.
And I think the other thing is that they thought about three separate murderers. Mm. And it's almost like, I completely understand that as human beings, we don't want to believe that there are that many monsters in the world. And I completely mm-hmm. understand mm-hmm. that. And I think we would all go insane if we thought about how many evil
three different people like that on the go at the same time in a small city like Edinburgh.
And I'm guessing that nobody really wants to think that there could be even more than that.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, again, I guess the one with the older cases, that probably just gives a stronger case for the defence, in that they can argue things like the chain of custody, storage of evidence, cross-contamination, all that kind of thing. So even if there is DNA that potentially does link a suspect, again, it doesn't necessarily mean that a conviction would be secured.
Especially if that same police force had dealt with that person in other dealings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they had their DNA in that same headquarters, everything's stored in ways that we would now deem to be completely antiquated and not remotely safe.
Absolutely. Or secure.
More secure than safe, sorry. But you know what I mean? It's just
questionable. It's
incredibly hard to prosecute
that. It's questionable, without a doubt.
Mm.
And especially if that was the only evidence that they had to, you know, against that person, you know, I think it would have to be stronger than that.
Did you even have the post-mortem?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough one.
Really tough. See, I thought that one was quite interesting.
It is very interesting.
And especially where it took place, if you are from Edinburgh or in and around Edinburgh. I think that's another thing that I find sort of macabre and morbidly fascinating, when you walk around the streets, a bit like when you were talking about when you did like ghost tour, and there's something really bizarre to think that these things have taken place, and it's almost like history connecting itself to the present day.
One thing that gets to me a little bit is that when we have cases that are so close to home like this, even when it's before your time, it kind of upsets me when I don't know about them or I haven't heard about them.
Mm, yeah.
Like, I think, why can we not be better at remembering
these people,
these victims, especially ones in addition, you know, ones that haven't had, you know, their cases solved. Like, why don't we know about them? Why aren't they more well publicised?
If that happened nowadays, we would all be talking about it. We would all remember. Yeah. There would be so much. There was only one picture of her available until a few years ago, and her family released another one. I've still kept the original one because I think it's a nice close-up of her face, but I just feel that if I was a mum just trying to look after my four kids, go out for my anniversary, I end up presumably sexually assaulted, definitely murdered, abandoned in a construction site, and exposed to the world and found by a guy walking his dog, I wouldn't be able to believe that people wouldn't know about it, wouldn't be angry about it, wouldn't want something done about it.
Yeah.
Really sad. Really, really sad. Definitely. Well, at least we're talking about it. At least we know about it.
And yes.
We can remember her. So
it's good to bring some light to these cases, I think.
Definitely.
Just to help people remember. They shouldn't be forgotten.
No.
All right, well, a little true crime fact then to finish off our episode.
Yeah, cheer me up, please.
All right, okay. So, did you know Depression-era gangster John Dillinger survived a shootout with the FBI, escaped from jail with a wooden gun, robbed police stations, had plastic surgery to change his face and removed his fingerprints, and led the government on a year-long chase that cost them four times the amount he had ever stolen?
Wow, that is dedication.
Have you ever seen Public Enemy Number One?
No, I haven't. Is it good?
Johnny Depp plays John Dillinger. It is good.
What plastic surgery did he have?
I don't know. Just it looks like just to change his face. But yeah, that's...
like, hang on, he's infinitely more handsome than he was.
Yeah.
Who is that striking man?
But yeah.
He looks a bit like that guy. Nah, it can't be him. He's far too good looking.
Yeah, so he was an American gangster of the Great Depression.
I'm going to sound really, really ignorant here. I didn't know that plastic surgery existed then. I'm guessing it must have done.
Yeah, oh, you're right. Because this is really...
Yeah.
This is really early.
So that's impressive. That's even more impressive.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't know that either. I thought plastic surgery was like an 80s thing.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
Apparently he led a group known as the Dillinger Gang, which was accused of robbing 24 banks and four police stations.
I mean, he named them after himself. He sounds like an egomaniac, to be fair.
Yeah, pretty much. He escaped from jail twice. He was charged but not convicted of the murder of an East Chicago, Indiana police officer who shot Dillinger in his bulletproof vest during a shootout. It was the only time Dillinger was charged with homicide. He was in prison from 1924 to 1933.
I always think it's really funny when gangsters name their self. Like, it reminds me of high school teenage girls giving their little group a name. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
Like the Dillinger Gang, you know what I mean?
As early as March 1934, Dillinger expressed an interest in plastic surgery. Paid a visit to a doctor in Chicago. He later testified that he performed facial surgery on himself and obliterated the fingerprint impressions on the tips of his fingers by the application of a caustic soda preparation.
Oh, well, that's not that difficult.
So Dillinger was told they would have to pay $5,000 for the plastic surgery. He wanted two moles removed on his face. He wanted a depression of the nose filled in, a scar, a large one to the left of the median line of the upper lip excised, wanted his dimples removed and wanted the angle of the mouth drawn up.
Sorry, but some of that definitely sounds aesthetic.
Yeah, the nose.
And the lips, he wants to look more smiley.
True.
He just wanted to look cute. Why would you want your dimples removed? Dimples are cute. Maybe dimples aren't cute for a gangster. Maybe they're not the thing. I don't think they're the thing. They're more like kids' TV entertainer.
They don't really say...
Give me your money.
They don't really say dangerous outlaw.
No. Depends what kind of gangster you are. I mean, he did have a toy gun, so... You're not going to have a wooden gun if it's not a toy, surely? People don't... Like, why would you have a wooden gun? It's a prop?
Prop, so he could get out of prison.
A theatre prop?
Yeah, so he could get out of prison.
Did he carve it? How does one obtain a wooden...
Oh, they would have worked on that, definitely, like in prison or something. They'll be like wood shop type thing in prison or some shit like that. I don't know.
It's just like, I'm just imagining, like, at school when you had to go and do like woodwork. It's just
yeah.
Like, oh, what are you making? Oh, nothing.
Spice rack.
It's a wall hanging.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it to my mum. What did you make
Spice
it?
Rack was mine.
It's blatantly a gun.
Do you know, in craft design technology, because I'm so bloody gullible, my teacher told me we made a hammer in craft design technology. Did you ever make a hammer?
I did not. I don't think they even trusted me to use a normal hammer, let alone make one.
Well, when we went to get mine, it was slightly rusty, and he told me I had a condition called rust finger, and I believed him.
Oh my god.
And then it was all later, my friend was like, you do know that he was joking, and I was like, oh. Well, now I do.
Did he tell you to go and get the tartan paint as well?
I was gullible.
Oh, bless your heart, rust finger. Oh my god.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can contact us by email, info@murdershespoke.net. You can also catch us on socials. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.